One of the most interesting characters of the late 20th century was the physicist Richard Feynman. He was a brilliant mind, sometimes called the most brilliant person in the world, and very eccentric. He was a wonderful storyteller. He was an expert lock picker. He backpacked around the world. You may remember him if you watched the Challenger Commission after the disaster, because he was the one who, in front of the scientists there, dropped the equivalent of an O-ring into dry ice and said, "What do you think is going to happen when I take it out? I think it'll crack," and it did. And Feynman wrote several books about his exploits and his pranks that he played on other scientists, and also, fortunately, about his growing up. And he talks about the inspiration for his scientific inquiry being his father, who used to take him out on long walks and talk to him about the natural world. And he remembers once as a child walking with his father, and his father pointed to a flower and said, "You know what that is?" And Feynman said it was, I don't know, a daisy or a rose. And his father said, "But do you know what it is?" And Feynman knew the scientific name. And so he proudly told his father whatever the scientific name was of the flower. And his father said, "Never think, because you know what something is called, that you know what it is." And Feynman said that was a lesson he never forgot. Knowing the name of something and the essence of something are two different things. And it's a mistake we often make. And that's why when our children ask us very simple questions about concepts or ideas that we know, we find we can't explain them. And sometimes those things we think we know best are hardest to explain. Open up any of Plato's dialogues, and Socrates is proving to anybody who will listen to him that they don't know what justice is and they don't know what truth is. All the things they're convinced they know, they don't know. Because they know what it's called, but they don't know what it is. This morning's parsha is Tetzaveh. In other words, it's about mitzvah. And sooner or later, any Jew who receives any kind of Jewish education will be told about mitzvah. And because we talk about mitzvah so much, we assume that we know what it is. Of course, if you ask the average Jewish person what a mitzvah is, they'll say a good deed. And that, we already know, is not precisely correct. Because tziva is the Hebrew root for command. It's not just something that you feel like doing, it's something that's commanded. Eliot Dorf, a scholar at the University of Judaism, wrote a book called Mitzvah Means Commandment. Although it's true that it has that colloquial meaning, someone will say to someone else, "Come on, do a mitzvah," which means do something nice. In essence, what we have learned through our tradition is a mitzvah is something that God has commanded us to do. And had you asked me before this past week, I would have exhausted my definition of a mitzvah with that. I mean, I could tell you what some of the mitzvot were, but what mitzvah as a generic category is, I would have said, is a commandment from God. But the Sfat Emet, the Gera Rebbe, whose spiritual insights and mystical tinges to the Torah are continually opening new doors to understanding of even the most well-understood ideas, has a different meaning of mitzvah. And he gets to it by translating the way we begin a blessing. He says, Asher kitshanu b'mitzvotav means, and you have made us holy through your mitzvot, vitzivanu. Vitzivanu is usually translated as, and commanded us. But he says there's another translation to vitzivanu, which the Hebrew allows, and that is, and has made us a mitzvah. A mitzvah, according to the Sfat Emet, is something you become, not something you do. It's a different understanding of what it is to do a mitzvah. And I think that I can illustrate it, at least in my own understanding, by analogies to other things, like a musician. I know from the little bit of piano that I played during the years that I took piano lessons before I forgot them, that there comes a point, even if you're not a maestro, even if you're not Vladimir Horowitz, even if you're no great expert on the piano, there comes a moment when you play the same song over and over and over again, to the regret of your parents who told you to practice. And they don't want to hear it anymore, but you play it over and over again because at a certain magical point, you don't have to play it anymore. It just flows through you. And you don't think about it. And you don't concentrate on it. And for that moment, you've become the song. You can lose it, but for an instant, if you ask someone, why are you playing it this way, and force them to think about it, the song falls apart. But you have become that which you started out just doing. And everybody who has either a gift at something or does it often enough knows what it is to have that sense of things flowing through you. A psychologist even wrote a book called Flow, in which he talks about reaching a state where your activity becomes not exactly unconscious, but not conscious either. It's some intermediate state where you are what you do. And there is no split anymore between you and the piano and the notes and the song. It's all one. I think when the Sfat Emet talks about becoming a mitzvah, that's what he's saying. And what I thought of immediately when I read it was a story that I heard from a rabbi who's a friend of mine, Larry Kushner, who told a story once when we were on a panel together about when his wife was pregnant with his first child. He said, look, we were both incredibly nervous. It was the middle of winter. We didn't know what it was to be pregnant or to have a child. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, she woke me up and said, I have to have a Snickers bar. He said, now, they lived in Sudbury, Massachusetts. He said, the snow was falling. The ground was covered with snow. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said to me, no, you don't understand. I have to have a Snickers bar. So I said to her, honey, I'm going to find you a Snickers bar. And I got dressed in the warmest clothes I could find, and I ran out, and I went from store to store. And all I thought of was a Snickers bar. He said, I didn't think, my God, I can't believe I have to go out in the middle of the night. I didn't think, how could she possibly ask me for this? It was all about getting the Snickers bar. And when I finally got it, I felt as though I had achieved something great, and I brought it back to her with such a sense of sipuk nefesh, of satisfaction of soul. And then I realized when I gave it to her, that's what the tradition wants us to do with a mitzvah. He said, because in that moment, I had an undivided consciousness. It was only about the Snickers bar. Nothing else. Now imagine, because I don't think anybody can keep that sense of whole consciousness continually, but imagine for a moment that when you do a mitzvah, and it can be any kind of mitzvah. It can be lighting the Shabbos candles. It can be feeding somebody at a soup kitchen. It can be going to Israel. It can be making calls last week at Super Sunday. It can be any mitzvah. Imagine if for the moment you did the mitzvah, you were fully present in it. You became the mitzvah. Imagine if when you opened the siddur at a certain point this morning, you only thought about prayer. Not about the person talking next to you. Not about the fact that the roof is not leaking. Thank God. Which is a mitzvah. Not about what you have to do afterwards, and not about what you did before. That's what the Tzfat Emet, I think, is teaching us. And it gave me a new window, a different way of conceiving the totality of the tradition. That a mitzvah isn't something you do, it's something that for a brief moment you become. And when God commands Israel, what God wants of them is not that they do something, but that they be something. That they embody, literally, in their being, what it is that God wants. In the same way that in the Talmud, when Rabbi Elazar was buried, they said that a Sefer Torah was buried today. Because that's what he was. We live in a time when the opposite is the ideal. When individuality and ego, sometimes in the good sense and not just the bad sense, attentiveness, consciousness, all of that is what we preach. And those are all important and valuable things, but as Oscar Wilde said, a great truth is anything the opposite of which is also a great truth. Think of any great truth, and the opposite also has something profound and important in it. And it is important at times to be egoless, as it is important at times to be full of self. And in the doing of the mitzvah, it should come through you and be you, and all the clamor of the internal voices that insist that you separate yourself, all of that should be for a moment stilled as you absorb the mitzvah and become it, as you attain a certain transparency in your soul, so that it and you and God are one. So I hope that sometime this week and in the future, you will think of this beautiful idea and know that it is possible not only to do a mitzvah in this world, but to become one. And that in becoming the mitzvah, you fulfill not only what it is that God wishes, but also what it is that it is possible for each soul to be. Shabbat Shalom.